morning and welcome to Morning Cyber. My name is Justin Robinson with Rogue Security, and I'm here with my wonderful co-host,
Joe Flower from Cyberforce. How are you doing, Justin?
I'm doing pretty good, Joe. We took a little bit of a hiatus, but I'm really excited to be back and chatting with you and talking about cybersecurity and life.
Yeah, classic kind of summer holiday week off. What did you get up to?
I camped. I did a lot of camping. Camped with my girlfriend, her three children. We had a camper, just a local campground, not too far out of town. One of the nights, it actually poured raining, and it was a thunderstorm, and it was just a really cool experience for myself as well as the kids. And I needed a week off of doing absolutely nothing. And I spent some time at the pool and got a nice little tan. How's your vacation? How's your summer going? Because I don't know if you've taken vacation or not yet.
Not as of yet. I'm the kind of person that takes like a day here, a day there. Just because obviously between myself and Katie, our amount of vacation time allotted is slightly different. So we kind of push all of our vacation, with our family being in England and some of my family being here, we kind of push it to December time, where we'll take a longer vacation over Christmas and go and visit. So nice. Summertime is more like a day here, as I said, a day there. But other than that, we soldier on.
I forgot we talked about this before, where I also prefer to just take an afternoon off every now and then, or just a day off when I'm not feeling like it. So I can appreciate that.
Yeah, I somewhat feel like it's a good way of recharging the batteries. So it's a good way to do it, but then each to their own is the best way to describe it. So lots has been happening since this week that we've had off. I mean, lots of things have stood out to myself. What about you? Has there been anything in particular that you wanted to bring to the table?
We talked about this a little bit before the show, but I definitely want to talk about it in a little more detail. We both saw the same article on BBC, which was Chinese firm smartwatch tracker. Or no, sorry, that wasn't the title.
Smartwatch hack could send fake pill reminders.
That's right. So it's interesting because this isn't new, right? Smartwatches have been around for a long time, and we've been giving our kids smartwatches for a while in order to track them. What we don't think about is who else has that information? Who else has that data, right? We trust the developer to house the data that goes along with the app that you're using to track your children. Or in this case, it was actually meant for elderly, so those with dementia, where they may still be capable of driving, but there may be a case for tracking them while they're driving. And what some pen testers found is that they could actually send in the article that we read, it was sending a pill notification. And obviously that's not bad if you're taking a multivitamin, but if you're taking something for your heart and you don't take it at the right time, or you take too much of it, you know, that could kill you. So I could get all so deep into the security of, you know, the software and the hardware, and then you've got the whole privacy piece. But I'm kind of interested in your thoughts of that as a watch connoisseur.
Yeah, well, that's true. I do love a good watch. And I mean, I wear one every day. So I wear a Fitbit generally every day, and I went from not really caring about my overall kind of health, I suppose, to now being not dependent upon it, but without it, I feel a bit odd not knowing how many steps I've done in a day. And as sad as that sounds, it's actually quite brilliant. But it's like you said, there's the odd time where I wonder just how many people get the data of my average beats per minute, how many people know what my calorie intake is, things like that. It's really odd because that's really personal information, but people willingly give it away without even giving it second thought.
Absolutely. Sorry, Joe.
No worries. I was just going to say, and when it comes to the taking of medication, now, that's incredibly serious. It's very funny because when I first saw this story, I don't know if you're a big fan of the TV show Lost by any chance.
Oh, yeah.
So I remember a specific scene, well, it's actually the majority of the episode, where in which Ben, this is a spoiler alert, we'll probably have to add that bit in, that Ben, who is the kind of leader of the so-called Others, gives Sawyer a monitor on his wrist and makes him believe that if his heart rate gets above a certain range or threshold, that he will die. Now, my worry is that it's the same kind of thing, that technology can be turned into a weapon very quickly. And this technology about, it's a subtle way of harming someone quite drastically. So as always, I just say, be very, very diligent when it comes to the technology, and especially if you're wearing it for take pill at this certain time. And I mean, it was a great pickup from that firm, the security firm, what they called, Pentest Partners, I think.
Pentest
Partners. Based out of the UK, yeah. They that was a very good kind of notice from them. I mean, we talk about how tech is very dangerous, but then also it's a key to so much more that's out there. So I think what you said is very to the point.
It goes back to that, the conversation we've had multiple times when we talk about these types of breaches. It's we put a lot of trust in the organizations that collect our data that we don't realize, like the amount of data that your Fitbit is giving the organization. Now, a responsible organization is going to anonymize that data. They're going to store it encrypted. It's going to be encrypted in transit. Now, where you get the problem with the cheaper electronics is that the same security controls aren't put into place. So, you know, maybe when the data is going between your watch and the company, they don't encrypt it because that would have cost them a little too much money. Or, you know, they don't take away certain aspects of your data because that, again, would cost them more money to implement. So it does come down to, there should be some responsibility back on, and I think it was 3G developers in this instance, was the developer of the app, both of it available on Android and iOS. Highly recommend that you would that you upgrade the Set Tracker, is what it's called, app, if you use it, because they have fixed that security vulnerability in the newest release.
I agree. And this kind of brings me on to something else that I was going to ask you about. I don't know if you were over camping, you saw last week, I can't remember which day it was specifically, but Spotify went down. Now, not only did Spotify go down, but if I'm right in saying that Pinterest went down as well, and this was just on a random morning. I'll have to try and see if there's an article out there. But I mean, I was a prime example of it because I came back from, I kind of go and exercise every morning. And I came back and Katie was sat there and she was getting frustrated because with her run, she listens to Spotify. And now Spotify was opening and not working. So the first thing you do is you check if the phone needs an upgrade straight away. You check if it needs like an iOS update or something like that. But it didn't, and Spotify was just not opening. So then obviously you check the best place for these kind of news articles to sprout from, and it was Twitter. And straight away people were saying, well, my Spotify is not working. Obviously the memes then came straight out, like your face when you realize Spotify is not working for everybody else and not just you. So I was just wondering if you had heard anything in regards to that and what may have caused it. Lots of conspiracies going around due to Spotify releasing in Russia a few days prior, I think. So there was some conspiracy around that, but yeah, I was just keen to get your input on that.
That's funny. That's very funny. So yeah, I did hear about that actually, and it does not surprise me that there's a ton of conspiracy theories going on about it. So it turned out, so it was iOS specific, so I'm assuming that Katie has an iPhone. Yep. So it turns out that it was actually the Facebook. It had nothing to do with other apps. It was Facebook. So inside of those apps that were failing, you can, so if you go into Spotify or you go into Pinterest on your web browser, you have the option to log into Pinterest or Spotify with your Facebook account. Yep. Instead of creating your own, a separate login, right? Similar to, like, if you go to websites and you can log in with your Gmail account instead of creating a new account. And so if you think about what it took for the for a developer to get that functionality to built into that application, they would have taken some code from Facebook, put it into their Pinterest app or their, and their Spotify app on their on the phone, and that piece of code was actually broken, which actually broke any application that was using the that Facebook login. And I don't know if every application was impacted, but I know like Pinterest, Spotify, Tinder, just to name a few.
Okay, so, I mean, this obviously boils down to one of my biggest fears, and that is that there's a couple of different companies that obviously monopolize the market here, and they own pretty much everything.
Yep.
So what you're, in my opinion, what you're saying is that Facebook can pretty much tear down millions and millions of users worldwide if they wanted to deny access to certain other companies' applications. Is that right?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And this is how, this is pretty much how software development works these days, right? Software is so complex, like tens of thousands to like millions of lines of code. So the industry has gotten to a point where certain people, like they'll build pieces of software that can go into other pieces, right? So Facebook built a login capability that Spotify and Pinterest can use in their applications instead of users having to create brand new accounts on those websites, right? A lot of us have Facebook accounts. A lot of us have Google accounts already. So why not use those existing logins on new accounts? It limits the amount of logins. So obviously, if you don't have as many passwords to remember, that's going to keep you safe. But what you don't think about is that when you log into Spotify or Pinterest with your Facebook login, you're allowing Facebook to gather certain pieces of information. So if you're using your Facebook login on Facebook and Pinterest and Spotify and Tinder, Facebook has all of that information, or at least the information that it can possibly grab with you know, with the abilities that it has. So, but stuff like this happens inside of software all the time, and that the end user isn't aware of, and the end user can't control. And that's where we can get into trouble a lot of the times with these data breaches of third parties that actually impact like Facebook. So I'm sure if you looked at Facebook's code, they would actually have like software created from like a bunch of different places, or and that was, and so like who's looking after all of that code basically?
Yeah, and I think it's quite similar because there's a game that I play, 8 Ball Pool. And that connects to your Facebook. And if you go on 8 Ball Pool, say, for example, you play against someone that you don't even know sometimes. Mm-hmm. If you, I don't know the chance of it happening, but if you played against that same person you don't know a couple of times, I know for a fact that I've had people that I have no connection to show up in my suggested friends on Facebook. And then I go on to 8 Ball Pool later on and find out they're friends with somebody else that I know. Mm-hmm. So it's just the weird, it's the most bizarre thing, and that's obviously you log in via Facebook. So it just goes to show that you just have to be careful what you log in with other credentials for, I suppose, isn't it?
And that's going to be my security tip of the day. You can actually log into Facebook. If you go into your settings, you can review all of the applications that are connected to your Facebook. And you can do this with like Google as well, where you can log into Google on other sites, where so you can go into your Google account, review the applications that you have already approved. I typically do this once a year, and I remove any applications that I really no longer use. And then that way Google doesn't have access to an account that I don't use anymore. Because if I'm not using it anymore, why does Google need access to it, or why does Facebook need access to it?
That's interesting. So I'm going to see if I can do it now. So for example, settings. And I'm on Facebook. I go in settings, see what it's connected to, yeah?
Yep.
So let me just see. So I have to try and find it. What would it be under?
So it would be under, if you in settings on the left-hand side, it would be under apps and websites.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Yeah. So this is going to show up stuff that I haven't used in ages. So maybe it's under preferences, apps, websites, and games. Or is it?
That could be it as well. There's likely a few different ways to get to it. From.
Oh, here we go. Logged in using Facebook.
Perfect.
Yeah, so I've only got one.
Okay.
So it's exactly what I said. It's April Pool. So that's mine. There are a lot of things that have expired, though. So this is stuff that I maybe don't have on my iPhone anymore, I'm assuming that means. Or I stopped the application from doing it or changed it. So, for example, there's games on here I haven't played in ages. I mean, there's Channel 4, which is a British TV channel. There's GoFundMe is on here. There's Pokemon Go as well, and Wish as well, the website nice. For shopping and Airbnb. So yeah, I don't know if that was dangerous me saying what's connected to my Facebook, but it's just interesting actually. So I advise, Justin, you're right, I advise people to go and look at that, because there's stuff that you didn't even realize was in there.
And what you're probably seeing there with those expired applications, Joe, is actually like over the years Facebook has become more secure. Google has mm-hmm. become more secure. Their requirements for applications have become higher. And so once they get to a certain threshold, they say, okay, when Joe first agreed to connect 8-Ball Pool to Facebook, we had this permissioning in place. But now things have changed. So we're going to expire the connection and make you reestablish it.
So I think, so is that necessary? Do we look upon that as a bad thing being done by Facebook? Or if anything, it's actually them trying to protect us even more.
It is definitely a protection mechanism. I mean, we give a lot of shit to Facebook and you know, Yahoo and the Big Four. I don't even know why I said Yahoo. They're not even the Big Four anymore. But and Google and Amazon.
I used to use Yahoo all the time.
My Yahoo Google used to be off. The,
and that's incredibly scary. So that's why I don't plug mine in. My dad bought me it as a Christmas present. He'll probably find out if he listens to this, but I haven't plugged it in once because I don't want it listening to me. That's scary.
And if you don't well, set that's it, another, it will.
No, and that's something else that we can talk about. So I'm asking you now, my parents have a Google household. This yep. is asking for them to be kind of, because I know those things can get hacked into quite easily, but we sat at the dinner table and we talk about Google in general, and something will come up like, oh, the weather today is so-and-so, or yes, you were asking about what is an armadillo. All right. So these kind of things. So what does that track? How does it work if they can listen to us nonstop?
Yeah. So there's a few things there. Like obviously they're not supposed to be listening. So like the Googles and the Alexas, I'm going to have to turn off my phone if I keep saying that word. They're not supposed to be listening. They're supposed to be, and actually that's a perfect example, right? There's a mm-hmm. word that they listen for that tells them, okay, now I need to start listening to something else. Right? So they're technically listening to you all the time, but they're not really supposed to be recording until they hear that keyword, right? Hey, okay. Google or Alexa. And so what you don't realize is that when you first set up your Google Home or your Alexa, you connected it to an account, right? With yep. the Google yeah, yeah. Home, it would be your Google account. Mm-hmm. And what we don't think about is that, okay, now that device has access to all of that information in your Google account, because we don't know what that information is anyway, because we already do a poor job of understanding our privacy and our security. So these devices are actually exacerbating the problem of like helping people understand where and how their information is being used, because the technology is so complex that you can't even hope to explain it. So that's why we tend to generalize, you know, just don't do this, do this, as opposed to actually explaining to people what the problems actually are. One of the other things I think a lot of people don't think about too is location, and how their location and having their location on impacts so much. So if you and I are in the same room and you search an you search armadillos on your phone and we both have location histories on, I'm going to start seeing armadillos on my newsfeed. Because if Google can tell that we're in the same location and that you're searching for an armadillo, it's going to believe that because I'm in that location, I'm also wanting to know that.
Well, I'm pretty sure you and I did this, didn't we? Because
we
were looking at social media. I don't even want to say the name because I'm scared that it's going to come up. And that's what it's come to. I'm genuinely scared to say some of these companies' names. And obviously that's because their marketing teams are absolutely brilliant. But I'll say it. I don't mind. We looked at Hootsuite.
Yes.
Now, I don't know if it was on my computer or my phone, but you told me the next day that you got you saw it on your Facebook, Instagram.
Almost instantly. Yeah. It was like I went home and I was going through Facebook and then like the sponsored ads were Hootsuite.
But I find that just incredible that something can work like that. So that's the point then. Is it listening to what we're saying when we say that word, that company name, or is it because we've searched different things? Because the other day I was thinking about something, okay, not even searching it, not even looking for it. I was genuinely just thinking about it, and it must have been coincidence because it came up later on.
Right. So, you know, we do simplify it a little bit. You know, we say that, you know, our devices are listening to us. What we actually mean is that our devices and our accounts have so much information about us that these data points can be correlated to a point where it can determine that I would probably be interested in Hootsuite as well. So it's, you know, it's, we think about it as like, you know, our devices listening, and to an extent they do, right? When we talk to our phones and we ask, you know, Google something to search for, it keeps a history of that. But the really suspicious stuff, the stuff that really makes us question, is those really complex data points that these applications are able to collect that produce these scenarios that make you think you're an absolute, you're insane, right? Like,
oh yeah, very much.
How does this, and that's where the educational piece I think comes into play. That's what I like. That's what I like to share.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it boils down to, are they listening or are they just learning? I mean, I remember I was watching, there's a morning show in England called This Morning, funnily enough. And they had a guy come on showing this this robot that he had built. Obviously, AI is a big thing within that industry. And basically, this robot was picking up on what people were saying and then relaying it back in a different way later on in the conversation. So I think, from what I can understand from you, mobile phones and cell phones alike are just very basic versions of that. Is that right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. I find that very interesting. Now, there are some other things that I had some questions for you in regards to. I've had quite a lot of people reach out to me from companies in the HR department asking me questions specific to this whole COVID situation and having to lay off employees and then kind of or furlough them and then maybe bring them back. Okay. And obviously with your background, I thought it'd be good to ask you, when it comes to furloughing an employee, obviously, fair enough, some of them may be disgruntled. Now, as a HR manager, Justin, in those environments, when it comes to the actual account, so say, for example, I've got a secure login into my email, I've got a login into, I don't know, the CRM that we use, I've got a login into the sales software that we use alongside the CRM, which is the internal one, what happens to those accounts? Is there any way that we can put them on hold, or how would we go about that?
Yeah, identity is like the forefront of security conversation right now because of COVID, because like you said, so many employees are going on furlough, and now so many employees are coming back. And then you wonder, did any of these companies like disable the accounts of these employees who left? And how do they know that these employees weren't doing anything on their systems while they were furloughed? I think this is the identity and access management space is really going to blow up. And so like identity and access management is just that. It's literally the management of identities and the access that those identities have. And so, you know, this is a concept that, you know, most security professionals will be familiar with. Many small businesses and medium-sized businesses won't, because their concern is always in the front end. How do we get our employees set up and working as quickly as possible? And they may not have the IT or security staff to be able to support like an offboarding, onboarding situation, such as like a furlough, or even in the case of like a merger and acquisition where you may be bringing in two companies, consolidating a bunch of roles. Like, how do you, this is an experience of mine, being within a security role during a merger and acquisition, and basically bringing two companies into one company where you've got two different sets of roles. Some people from the new company are leaving. Some people from the old company are going to be leaving. It's a very complex situation. I'll give you, BlackRock is a financial institution that you've probably heard of.
Yeah.
They have an identity access management team of like 100 people. It's the biggest security team that they have. And I'm sure there's going to be like listeners from BlackRock being like, I don't think we have that many people here. Maybe we should count.
They wouldn't know though. That's the thing though, isn't it? They wouldn't know.
Exactly. So it's a very, it tends to be a very manual process, because if you think about it, okay, like I can take every offboarded employee that goes through my HR system and remove their access. But how do I do that in a consistent way that I can measure and make better over time? Because that's what we're really talking about, is, you know, securing our systems is one thing, but we need to continually do this over time and be able to replicate it on different systems. So I don't know. My biggest advice would be to have a really good business analyst or a project manager if you can't afford an IAM team, because that's going to be the type of person in your organization who's going to be in that mindset of being able to think about a person through their entire longevity at your organization and identify the needs from an access perspective. We talk often about zero trust in security, and I know you and I have talked about that many, many times. And the idea is that, you know, you start out with the very minimum amount as opposed to giving all of the access and then removing what they don't need. You give them the minimum amount, and then you can add access. And that in and of itself can actually, as an exercise, can actually help you keep track of what your users have. So there's so much danger around not offboarding, and the offboarding could be like somebody going on furlough, somebody who quits on their own volition, or somebody you may terminate. Now, obviously, there's going to be different risks given each one of those scenarios, but there's definitely steps that you can take. And having an identified list of like what your users have access to is a good first start. And I would recommend that for any small, medium-sized businesses who don't have that to get that.
Okay, that's brilliant. I mean, that honestly has just been the major kind of question that I've been approached with when performing some sort of HR consulting activities. They ask me that, and I say to them, look, that's something I'm going to have to take away and ask people that I know would know about it. But that's fair enough. Now, I wanted to kind of see, we always say you have to be careful about this, you have to be careful about that, and all technology is doing this. But what's positive, Justin? What's come out of this week for you that you find has been really positive? It doesn't have to be in the tech world, that's for sure. But just a couple of positive things that you've seen this week.
So, you know, and being in the industry, that's typically the news that I see. So it's always like, you know, I always have to be careful with my opinion, because sometimes it's like, it's not realistic for normal people. But if I'm going to be honest, I have seen a vast increase of organizations and individuals finally caring about cybersecurity and realizing and understanding the risks. But the reason why that is, and it took me a little while to figure that out, is because there's more people in our industry, more security professionals, that understand that it's not all about the network, it's not all about the software, it's about the people. And I'm finding that more and more, kind of as weeks progress, and maybe COVID is having a lot to do with this, it's humbling people, but you know, it's bringing the awareness more to the forefront, and security professionals are framing things in a way that aren't insulting people, because, you know, we can judge as much as we want, but we sometimes forget that we've been in this, like, I've been in this industry for 20 years. I've been using a computer since I was 9 years old. You know, I could take it apart. I could put it back together. I can tell you everything that's in it. I could do the same thing to you while out of network gear. And you take that for granted. But what I'm seeing is a lot more humility in the industry, which is very promising as somebody who really genuinely cares about improving people's security, because it really does start with people. And if we can learn to engage people on a more personal level, and then we can learn to communicate sort of how we go about securing what they need to secure, because we've built that trust, and we're not insulting them, we're actually rewarding and celebrating the small successes, you know. And I'm seeing much more of that, like on Twitter, on LinkedIn, just everywhere.
I feel as though there's been a lot more of a, obviously the cybersecurity sector, there's been a huge element of community in general. And I feel as though people that are not in the sector are being welcomed in with open arms. And it all boils down to when we've discussed about this before, that people look at cyber and cybersecurity in general as a bit of an elusive being, an entity, whereas now it's becoming one and all for everybody. I think that's the best way to describe it. And the learning and the stuff that's out there. I mean, when I first got into it, I utilized LinkedIn Learning. It was huge for me. I don't know if you've had a chance to look at it, Justin, but there's one course in particular, which is just the intro to cybersecurity. And I advise every single person that listens to this, that doesn't listen to this, tell all of your friends that they need to take part in that one. I think it's an hour long, and you will understand cyber like you've never even thought about your tech before. So there's that. And I feel as though during this COVID scenario, obviously it's been absolutely awful, but something to have come out of it is everybody's together within the cyber community now. Quite a poignant takeaway from this week's episode, that's totally for sure. But yeah, I mean, I think we need to implement some of these Justin's tech tips a little bit more. I don't know how you feel about Justin doing a 5-minute live every week on our morning cyber. And I'd like to see what all of our listeners think to that as well, because I think it'd be quite funny to get Justin in front of a camera for 5 minutes a week going through tech things with you. But what are your thoughts on that?
Oh, I'd love to do that. And I would definitely be interested in hearing from our listeners. But that's just the type of person that I am. And I think a lot of people in our industry are like that. We want to teach. We want to teach. We're just not given the right platforms. There's so many people. I work with some brilliant people. Some brilliant interns that are just getting into the industry as well, and they're come to me and they're like, it seems so difficult, and they're so complex. Like there's a lot of complexity and there's just not a lot of opportunities. And like we talked about last time, where there's that discrepancy around security professionals saying that there aren't opportunities and organizations saying that there aren't enough security professionals. It's because we're not having the right conversation. And no. It's the same thing with cybersecurity, individual or otherwise. We're not having the right conversation. We're punishing people. You know, we're not educating them before it happens or giving them a platform that they can do that. And I like LinkedIn Learning for that reason as well.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I think that's a good place to make a pause there. How about that, Justin? I think I'd like to say thank you for your time, as always. I think we've got a bit of a social media contest going on at the moment. Do you want to give us a bit more insight on that?
Absolutely. Head on over to our LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. Like, subscribe, follow, whatever it is you do on that platform. You will be entered to win some sweet Morning Cyber swag that we're going to be drawing at the end of this month. Probably actually the first week of August, because the contest runs until the end of July. And then we'll ship out some sweet swag. I think we're gonna look at some proofs this week on some of those designs and
figure out. There's a couple of things that will be going up on sale on the website as well once we've got them approved, and once I can persuade Justin that maybe a sweater without a hood might be nicer than a sweater with a hood. We've just got to go through all those little details first, but we'll get those up. And if you feel like purchasing one, then anything that we kind of make from it, obviously some money of that is going to be going to charity, and we'll be posting the charities that we are supporting at the start of every month. I mean, Justin, I don't know about you, if there is a charity that we haven't discussed this yet, but I know mine will be going to some form of cancer research. But yeah, that's what our plan for the next coming months, and we'll be having some awesome kind of morning cyber gear you to purchase on the website.
Awesome. I'm really excited, and I'm so looking forward to more episodes. We talked a little bit about how we're going to schedule Morning Cyber, and so we'll continue to share more of that with our listeners, and they can really be part of this journey with us.
Yeah, I agree. Well, thanks, and signing out. Speak soon.
Cheers, everybody.